T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Here it comes. And a drive to left. Grand slam time.
Len Casper.
That's win.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, baby.
TV voice of the Cubs.
And one other question about Chewbacca.
Yeah.
Does he still qualify for the Wookiee of the Year?
Slightly above average bassist.
Maybe Casper playing the guitar, really into it.
Len Casper. With Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Happy Hours brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. Len Casper is on Twitter, at Len Casper, and the TV voice of the Cubs joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So, Len, yesterday was odd in that baseball players go through their perfunctory paint-by-numbers beanball dance, I guess, for lack of a better term. How did you deal with it?
Well, J.D. thought Hamels definitely had a purpose when he threw at Arenado. You know, and after that, I'm not sure how much of it was with purpose. It's really tricky to try to figure out intent. I think Arenado knew after the game that it was probably coming at some point after Bryant had been hit three times in the last year in the season series. Obviously, he got drilled in the head last year, hit twice the night before. Baez had his tower buzzed earlier in the game. Arenado seemed to be more upset about where he was hit than anything else. And in a strange way, I think Arenado avoided what could have been a really bad situation by not charging the mound, because if he charges the mound, obviously he gets kicked out of the game. Hamels probably ends up getting kicked out of the game. You probably have a couple other players on your team, maybe a coach or two. The manager might get ejected, and all of a sudden you got to figure out a bullpen strategy for the rest of the day. So the fact that it didn't blow up after that. It looked like Hamels, I think, knew he was going to get hit. He didn't really react. So those two guys, you know, after all of that, I think kind of calmed things down a little bit. But in terms of the hit batters late in the game, I have a hard time figuring out, you know, whether those were on purpose or not.
Arenado said after the game that it would be a spicy series if the two played again. That would obviously be in the playoffs. I wouldn't expect any kind of beanball war in a playoff series, would you?
No. No, I think, if anything, maybe something next year. You know, Baez obviously took his time after the home run, but that came right after Rizzo got drilled. So, you know, the problem with the unwritten rules is that they're the rules according to me.
Mm-hmm.
And someone has to finish this whole thing and say, we're good. And typically, your team doesn't feel like you're good until you hit the last guy. And so that's why this stuff gets out of hand at times. But I guess I rely on the fact that Bud Black and Joe Maddon are really good friends, and that probably will end it. And the fact that they don't play again this year. Hopefully by next year some of this will be forgotten.
This question was asked, and I find it a legitimate one. When Joe Maddon actually says part of the reason why Chris Bryant gets a rest, he used the term ball peen to saying he was hit a couple of times, and that's one of the reasons he's out. If you are one of these old school tough guys, you say, hey, you know, around the margins, if we get a chance to keep an MVP player out of the lineup, maybe see a replacement level replacement, yeah, let's hit him a couple times, maybe have a better chance to win a game.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that happens, that's a cognizant thing. Especially, you know, Peter Lambert in his second big league start, I don't think is thrown at people on purpose. I don't necessarily think Brad Brock tried to hit Walters on purpose, but the Rockies were insistent that it happened. I suppose in some cases you might get a guy who decides to take justice into his own hands, but I I really, really hesitate to do that. I think the Hamels Arenado thing is kind of, it is old school baseball. I didn't really have a big problem with it. And as I said, the fact that Arenado was aggravated, but he didn't charge the mound, to me should have probably ended all of it right there.
Have you ever heard from hitters who either leave Coors Field after a couple of days or Rockies themselves, that when they get to the next ballpark, there's a little bit of a hangover? The stuff doesn't break the same way at Coors. So I just wonder, I've heard some guys say it, you go somewhere else and you have to readjust. Like, oh, now I'm, it's almost like back in the show again. And this stuff does things to me. I gotta watch out for this curveball. It's sharper. This slider's a little sharper.
Fatigue, from what I gather. I talked to Charlie Blackman about it this week. I talked to Ryan Spielborgs, who's one of their broadcasters and a former outfielder, and he said, you actually, at Coors, want to get jammed because there's so much room in the outfield that a jam shot, pop-up generally will get over the infielders and in front of the outfielders, and you never want to get jammed when you go somewhere else. He said, you know, his theory is if you could get guys to buy in, he said, as a fourth outfielder, I'm going to hit at Coors Field, right? Offense is just guys hit. And if you look at Spielborg's career, he did hit. He said, so if you put me in there for Charlie Blackman, I'm probably going to have a good offensive day. And give your star players maybe a day or two off in a week-long homestand so the fatigue factor isn't as big a deal when you leave and you go on the road. The problem is, Charlie Blackman and Nolan Arenado and guys like that, they want to play because they want to hit their two home runs that day or go 4 for 5 because that ballpark is why your numbers look so eye-popping. So that's, I think, the challenge for a home player there. In terms of a visitor, I just don't think you're there long enough to quote, adjust to it. I got really congested there. I felt dehydrated the second day I was there. Talking to a couple of pitchers on the Cubs staff, they said they had trouble sleeping. So it definitely affects your body, even in a short-term 3-day stint. But I don't think that it has long-term effects when you're only there for a few days.
Brad Brock right now is sporting an earned run average of 6.49, and looking at the peripherals, his expected fielder independent pitching isn't much better at 5.18. Are we looking at a phantom injured list here or something to do? Because even in low leverage situation, again, he's getting hit.
Well, this is, again, the residual of the quote, beanball war, whether he hit Walters on purpose or not. You've got whatever it was, 10-0 lead. Walters, after Rizzo, took second base, decided to take second and third. And all of a sudden, Brock gives up another run without a hit. So it was a pretty good inning, but he adds a run to his ERA. I think Joe's going to give him plenty of opportunities to sort himself out. And clearly the clock is now ticking because of Craig Kimbrell's impending appearance on the roster. So I'd say that these next 2 weeks are pretty critical for Brad Brock for sure.
One of the hot topics when the Cubs had signed at Kimbrell last Friday was that they now are competing with the Dodgers for best team in the National League. Cubs are a half game out in their own division. The Dodgers have a run differential 40 runs larger than the Cubs. How close are the Cubs and Dodgers in your mind?
I think pretty close. The Dodgers offensively are pretty stacked, and the Cubs are too. But Cody Bellinger, right now feels like the MVP. They have a really deep lineup. Their rotation has been excellent. Clayton Kershaw kind of seems to be the old Clayton Kershaw. Hyunjin Ryu right now is in the Cy Young debate. Rich Hill, I think, is 39 and still pitching pretty well. So, Walker Buehler, fireballing right-hander. They're really good. I think as it stands right now, they're probably the test case. They're the team that the Cubs, I suppose, measure themselves against, and a team that's been in the World Series each of the last 2 years. But I agree. I think they're the two best in the NL on paper. And four-game weekend series, Lester Kershaw tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. I really look forward to it. Corey Seager is going to be out for a bit after straining his hamstring. But the one thing the Dodgers have in terms of their position players, they have a lot of depth. So even missing one guy, I don't anticipate that offense looking much weaker.
The sample size keeps growing for Victor Caratini as a hitter. Slash line currently 340, 450 on base, and 540 slugging. It's a weighted runs created plus of 164. That means he's 64% better than average as a run producer. When does this tell you it's time to find more at-bats for him if we're not already there yet?
I think we are there. Joe got him two starts in Denver. I think he's going to get a start this weekend in L.A., probably with Darvish. And it goes back to a conversation we've had in the past few weeks. It's two things. It's getting Victor's bat in the lineup, and he had a really good day behind the plate. What an athletic catch
made. Oh, yeah, the full layup.
On the bunt attempt. But offensively, he's really intriguing. Switch hitter, starting to hit for some more home run power. That's kind of the part of the game that hadn't shown up over the last couple of years. And then getting Contreras a lot of rest. The Cubs are in a stretch now where they'll play 50 games, I believe, over a 52-day stretch. You just don't want Wilson to deal with what he did last year and have physical or mental fatigue be a part of it. And keep his offensive numbers where they are. So I think it's a nice luxury to have, but I also think it's paramount that the Cubs make sure that Contreras, by September, is not dragging. He caught the most innings in all of baseball last year, and he probably will again this year, but you'd like to lower that number a fair amount, and I think Caratini gives you that chance.
Len, we're less than a month from the All-Star Game, and for a lot of fans, it's just kind of a thing that happens. For some, it is kind of big business. For broadcasters like yourself, I imagine you just hear it and think vacation for at least a couple of days, or sleep, or something like that. Have you given much thought to the new process by which they're going to elect All-Star starters?
Well, I have two ways to answer this. If I'm being completely honest, my initial answer is I don't really care, but I'm going to try to play along because that's what we do.
Well, I get it.
So, yeah, the two-tier thing is fine, I guess. The three finalists, there's, what, nine outfielders who become finalists, mm-hmm. and then you vote again. Whatever.
Appreciate your honesty.
I just hope the best players get in, and I hope a lot of Cubs get in, obviously. But beyond that, I don't know.
Let me ask this then. I wondered, too, because you're a guy who's seen so much baseball more than just about anybody on the planet. Is anything going to spark interest for Len Casper about the All-Star game at this point? I mean, I know you got to separate a little bit from the fact that you get 3 days to sleep and maybe see your family. And turn it off for a little while. But I just wonder if there's anything to be done.
Look, I'll watch, and I'm interested as a baseball fan in watching the game. I just think the process of getting guys into the All-Star mix, I'm not saying this is bad, and I'm not saying, well, why are they adding layers to the voting? I am just saying, as a baseball fan, as a broadcaster, it doesn't matter to me how it happens.
Yeah.
If this helps get the best player in as a starter, I'm fine. But when it's just a fan vote, it's going to come down to big markets and marketing pitches. I think the Cubs are really good about it. Obviously, the team wants their guys to be represented and to do well. But I think we do a good job of not overselling it, right? Because I do think it gets to a point where it's like, okay, we get it. Cub fans are going to vote for their guys. I think they have seven guys in the mix right now. But in terms of the game itself, I don't know if there is anything you can do to create more interest. I know one thing, adding some sort of home field advantage in the World Series was not the thing.
No.
And baseball, thankfully, realized that that was not a good method. I think they should do an old-timers game either instead of the home run derby or before it. I would watch that. I think that would be cool, an old-timers game. At the site of the All-Star game, you get former players from that team, and then you get, you know, Hall of Famers and stuff. I just think it would be cool to see guys in their uniforms again.
It would. You'd really have to worry.
That's the 12-year-old me.
You really have to worry about the beanball war starting the old-timers game, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even if guys who are in their 70s are, you know, walking to first base after, you know, dribbling a ball down the third base line, it still would be cool to see some of the all-time greats. Who wouldn't want to see Reggie Jackson in a Yankee uniform again? Come on.
I'm in for that. Len, have a great time in L.A. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
Len Casper, brought to you by The Art of Pizza. The Art of Pizza is celebrating 30 years in Lakeview. The Art of Pizza, located at 3033 North Ashland. Stop in for up to 18 varieties of hot, fresh, stuffed, pan, and thin crust slices. Delivery begins 11 a.m. every day. Call 773-327-5600 or visit artofpizzachicago.com. From the Cubs to the Sox, and something that is going to be commemorated with a T-shirt at Guaranteed Rate Field. And it's Disco Demolition Night that is turning 40 years old. I turn 50 as it turns 40. And there was recently an article written and for Vice.com by an area, a Chicago music writer, that is a very well-argued piece about why Disco Demolition should not be celebrated. What it was, what it represented, and why, yes, it happened, nobody can make it unhappen, but why it definitely should not be celebrated by the White Sox. And because of some social media attention as well, the White Sox are reviewing this, they're saying, and they're on their heels a little bit. Huh. And some of it is well-reasoned. I think some of it is not.
We will get into that. We've also got the Blues winning their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. And one of the most predictable things to happen after the Stanley Cup gets won happened. We will bring you some tasty, tasty audio as well.
And keep listening for the chance to win tickets to Wednesday's Sox-Cubs game at Wrigley Field. We'll do that in the next 42 minutes.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Minutes on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Real quick, let's check the leaderboard at Pebble Beach, the U.S. Open. Scott Piercy and John Rahm are both 3 under. The group at 2 under, Thorbjørn Olesen, Ricky Fowler, and Louis Oosthuizen. U.S. Open coverage brought to you by the BMW Championship at Medina Country Club, August 13th through August 18th, 2019. Visit BMWChampionship.com. We know Disco Demolition Night is sort of baked into our lore here, of course, in Steve Dahl.
Absolutely.
And his minions blowing up a bunch of disco records, and then they ended up ruining the field, and it was a riot slash party, depending on how you want to describe. They forfeited the second game of a doubleheader, one of the great radio promotions gone wrong, or all too well.
So right.
Well, there's a belief here now from Vice.com, a really good local music writer named Josh Terry, argues as follows. He says, it's strange for a professional sports team to lovingly remember one of its biggest non-baseball mistakes, but really it's wrong because the whole premise of the original promotion shouldn't have happened in the first place. Disco was a genre mostly created by and made for Black, Latino, and gay people and other marginalized groups. And while Steve Dahl's vehemently denied it as a harmless stunt, its execution was racist and homophobic. Rolling Stone critic Dave Marsh attended the promotion and wrote at the time, quote, your most paranoid fantasy about where the ethnic cleansing of the rock radio could ultimately lead. White males, 18 to 34, the most likely to see disco as the product of homosexuals, blacks, and Latins. Therefore, they're the most likely to respond to appeals to wipe out such threats to their security.
Huh.
Now, fascinating. And I can't dispute the fact that that is true about disco music, that in large part in what it became and what we now know it truly was, it was liberating and identifying for blacks and Latins and homosexuals and all of the cross of those various
marginalized in that community, in a music community.
Correct. We know that's true. However, I don't believe at any point there was a consciousness of intent to destroy or disenfranchise those groups of people at this event. It may have underpinned some of the psychology, but I bring myself back to what I understood disco to be. Granted, at that year I was 10 years old, but disco was so much bigger so much bigger than just those marginalized groups. And I'm talking about the effect of Saturday Night Fever in 1977. See, to me, when somebody says disco, I don't think marginalized groups. I think three Australian guys with big hair. The Bee Gees were it. That was what I pictured for disco outside of Donna Summer, perhaps, and some other groups.
All right.
But it was so much bigger. Like, for example, The Stones' Miss You. That's a disco song.
Okay.
Another Brick in the Wall Part 2 is a disco song. It is the same beat as Stayin' Alive.
So I wonder then if what we're dealing with here from Josh Terry on Vice and in other places and at the time, I forget the name of the music writer, Dave Marsh, was it?
Yep, Dave Marsh at Rolling Stone.
At Rolling Stone. I read this morning when it was going around in the emails and in our pre-show texts and stuff, and I did the same thing that I hate doing every single time it happens to me. I realized I read something like, huh, that's a perspective I've never had to think about before. And then I thought, well, better start thinking about it, because that's kind of what I owe to other perspectives like that. Like, don't turn it off. Don't stop listening.
No, I get that.
Don't not think about it.
No,
you have to consider
those
things. Being
aware of LGBTQ perspectives and the perspective of marginalized groups, I get it. However, I can totally understand the perspective, but disco was a phenomenon. Like, my parents and their friends in the suburbs, after Saturday Night Fever, on Saturday nights, there were disco DJs that would come to your house and hang a disco ball in your living room.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd do the lighting up the floor thing.
Rumor has it, my dad had the whole dance from Saturday Night Fever memorized. That's the tale.
And the whole the way Steve Dahl did that, I don't remember it being, and even dog whistly in that regard. It was more, this music's lame. At the time, the way this was sold, the coho lips and the whole thing, it wasn't about these marginalized communities are coming to take away our freedoms. It was not, as I don't think the writer who says this was the original straight pride parade. And to be completely fair, I don't really think that's true. It was just more, yo, this music sucks. It's lame. Rock and roll.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it sounds as though, obviously, like I was this morning when I read the piece, I hadn't considered that point of view. And if the sin from disco demolition is having not considered the view from the other side, so be it.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Inconsiderate.
But
right?
Absolutely. It was intentionally inconsiderate, though. I mean, it was a promotion. It was a stunt. And I've talked with Paul Sullivan about it, a great baseball writer from the Tribune who was at the game. I found out he was there, and we talked a little bit about being there. There was spectacle about it. I mean, Steve Dahl had gotten this thing up to a fever pitch where you just had to go there to see what was going to happen. I mean, I can't speak for everybody who was there, obviously. But I know my dad, who was living in Chicago but out of town, going back and forth between here and Iowa at the time. Like, he knew what was going on and kind of, regretted not having a chance to go because he was out of town or whatever. But it was about seeing what the hell this crazy radio guy was going to do, more than the hatred of disco or music or anything like that. There were a lot of, I have to imagine that there were a lot of different forces going into something so ridiculous as this was.
A lot of good points from texters saying Emotional Rescue by the Stones is disco too. That could have been a Bee Gees song. Saying another one, Bites the Dust, I Was Made for Loving You by Kiss, and Do You Think I'm Sexy by Rod Stewart, all that stuff. Yet that was going after disco. While I can't argue with the perspective that a marginalized person would feel somewhat attacked. To me, the more convincing point that is made about the spectacle of disco demolition conjures up the idea of book burnings, just the idea of destroying art.
Hmm.
That's unseemly. That I understand. The idea of big piles of art created by other human beings and deciding that you're going to be the arbiter and say these are bad, destroy them, that there is something gross about that. That's fair. I think that's fair.
I guess, but there's a different scenario, though. Like, it's one thing to have, like, a government or a sanctioned entity ending some sort of expression or art. Steve Dahl at the time was a 24-year-old wanton, reckless radio voice. Yeah, he was a complete lunatic who was just into doing something large and out of control. I mean, that's what that was. That's what the guy kind of stood for at the time.
This is 847. Damn you, Bernstein. I just listened to another Brick in the Wall Part 2 after hearing you refer to it as disco, and now I can just hear Robin Gibb yelling, "Teacher, leave those kids alone." But it is. The beat is, you can, if you get the lyrics to stay in alive in your head, and just listen to the beat of another Brick in the Wall Part 2, you can jump right in to the first stanza of Stayin' Alive. And if you read the story about the production of that song and I believe it was Alan Parsons, or he had done Dark Side of the Moon, but there's all sorts of stories into what they wanted and what they didn't want, and what Roger Waters was, about how some of that got produced. There's great oral history stuff about the production of The Wall, but they knew the disco beat was hot.
I think, though, too, you know, because there's a lot of texters, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to come down on this, is, oh, really? You know, seriously, we've got to examine everything now? The question I would have is this, and it's kind of something I asked myself this morning, and something Jay and I were talking about this morning, too. What's the harm in going back and looking at something? What's the harm in trying to figure out how everybody felt about a thing as it was going on, especially from voices that weren't considered at the time? I mean, that's all we're sitting here doing. That's what Josh Terry is up to here. I mean, it's my fault that I hadn't considered it.
Yeah, I never thought about it.
I hadn't thought about it, and I didn't have to.
I've got enough room in my head that I can think about it.
You know, and it's not comfortable feeling like, oh, I didn't have to consider this person's voice. Like, that kind of sucks. I don't like that's a thing about me, that I hadn't thought about it in the past. But thankfully, now I've got a chance to look back and think about it a little bit more and consider other perspectives.
And the bottom line is, the truth is, disco won. Disco paved the way for something called hip-hop and EDM, the explosion of house music.
Disco didn't die.
Nope.
No.
No, it kind of flourished.
No.
And its DNA can be traced into what everybody listens to now. Tom in Algonquin, you're on The Score. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
What's up, Tom?
Hey, just wanted to give you my two cents. I grew up in that area, you know, and...
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry. I grew up in that area. I used to listen to Steve Dahl nonstop, and I used to tape his show. I'd work, I'd come home and put the show on tape whatever it was, 8-tracks or whatever we used to use at the time. I was such a big fan. And I'll tell you, hearing what I heard today, and it just shows you, I don't think there's anything going back and wrong going back and analyzing, but it just shows you where we're at today. I mean, everything gets analyzed and looked at from kind of different perspectives. Back then, there was nothing about racism in there. There was nothing about, you know, different ethnic groups or homophobics or anything like that. Honestly, you know, it was just a difference in music. And quite frankly, that was my era of a big bar scene. You know, we used to go into, you know, our rock and roll bars and, you know, and hang out. And then we'd go into a disco bar. And the one thing we realized is those disco bars were taking a lot of our women. You know, our women were dancing with all the disco guys.
That was
part of our biggest concern. It's like, hey, this is ridiculous. All the girls we like, they're over there doing the disco with all these guys, and we're sitting there at the rock and roll band, you know. And that was part of my frustration. It was like, wait a second, we got to get our women back.
Probably ought to have bought a Bee Gees album.
I was
going to
say, it was incel culture then.
Yeah.
Wow, Tom, thank you for the perspective. That's fascinating.
Should have bought a Bee Gees album.
Right, you know, hey, I think the message that's said there, the lesson to be learned, is start listening to what they're listening to.
Yeah, like, right? Earth, Wind & Fire is pretty good. Get into it.
Right?
I think that's the better play. Lawrence Holmes is coming up with Transition in just a couple of minutes. On the other side of a quick one here, something very, very predictable happened after the Blues won the Stanley Cup last
night.
Hilarious.
This is 2 minutes of hockey.
And it got broadcast to everybody. You'll hear it next.
And you will also have the opportunity next to be the winner of a pair of tickets to see the White Sox play the Cubs at Wrigley on Wednesday. So don't go anywhere. Keep it here. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouthwatering water. Give me, Connor, a single-digit number.
Show me number 6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Caller 6 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of tickets to see the White Sox and Cubs at Wrigley Field on Wednesday, courtesy of 670 The Score Radio, home of Cubs baseball. And on Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to be there, June 18th and 19th, Gallagher Way, the Wintrust Crosstown Series, 670 The Score, broadcasting live from 9 a.m. until first pitch at 7:05, presented by Wintrust. They are the presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. You got sound we got to hear?
Oh, yeah. So this started right at the beginning of the celebration after the Blues won their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. And it begins, as it always begins, with the commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, handing off the cup.
Captain Alex Pietrangelo, come get the Stanley Cup.
One brief pose, and then it will go high in the air. A dream realized for him, and then all of his teammates. Jay Bouwmeester played in his 1,259th hockey game tonight. That's a long Alex Steen, long career as well, gets it next.
Chris Thorne, a role player, a tough player. Accept and execute, Doc, those role players, and you see the respect they have for Thorburn, a guy that did not see the ice. And none at all in the Cup Final. And David Perron, third tour of duty with the St. Louis Blues, signed as a free agent from the Vegas Golden Knights this offseason by general manager Doug Armstrong.
Second bit of hardware for O'Reilly, and the one of the greatest meaning. Handed off to an alternate captain for the team, Vladimir Tarasenko. Second-generation hockey player, second-generation Olympian. His father played for Viktor Tiganov in 94. And more celebrations and more screaming. This time, Tyler Boza.
Jaden Schwartz. The St. Louis native, Patrick Maroon. Scored that huge OT winner in round two against Dallas at home.
And there is Carl Gunnarsson with the overtime winner in game number two right here in Boston.
Those were all F-bombs.
Exaltation language. That's what it was. It was a bunch of F-bombs mixed with a bunch of Howard Dean screams. That was the Blues last night. That's terrific stuff.
And then he came back from commercial and he called it exaltation language.
Yeah.
And then he said, we've turned that mic off.
What do you think's going to happen? You're handing a trophy to a bunch of hockey players. That's in the vocabulary, man.
We thank Ian Rappaport and Len Casper for joining us. Zawoski Camp and Diaz, the producers. Brian Gertsch, the video feed. Tomorrow, I'm going to be out. I have, yes, an eighth grade graduation tomorrow morning.
You're graduating eighth grade.
I'm finally graduating eighth grade.
Happy for you.
It's, Mark Brody will be there in my stead, Jonah Carey, and more tomorrow. So you enjoy. I'll be back with you.
I shall. Lawrence Holmes is up next. Transition on the way on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.